From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for May 2020. Well, Wisconsin has loosened up some of the quarantine restrictions. You can now get your car washed, get your lawnmower repaired, and you can get your dog groomed. Even though I can't get my hair done unless I want a poodle cut. This may be a medical first. A woman's silicone breast implants helped deflect a bullet that her doctor said saved her life. She did suffer a broken rib and had both implants removed. She also suffered another side effect. She's not as popular as she used to be. Here are a couple of stories about how people are handling the pandemic. A Canadian has found a way to cope with being quarantined. He gets a new tattoo for every day of the lockdown. Just one problem with that. He's running out of skin, and by his own admission, he's starting to look like a block of blue cheese. And a man in Spain was busted this week for taking his fish for a walk. In case you're wondering, the fish was in a bowl. He was trying to take advantage of the rule allowing pet owners to leave their homes so that their pets can, you know, do their business. The police tweeted a picture of the man with his fish sitting on a park bench. And just to clarify, the man was sitting on the bench, not the fish. And finally, this is not fake news. The state of Illinois, until the mid-1950s, had a law on the books that said it was illegal to be ugly. That would explain all the jails they built. And to keep peace in the family, both of my wife's parents were from Illinois, and neither one of them did any time. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding and Brian Kill, Art Rothschild. And wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Good to have you back on the podcast here, Max.
I'm happy to be back.
Well, folks, for the week overall, we gave up a few nickels. The NASDAQ shed just 0.3%, losing 30 points this week, closed at 86.05. The broader markets, the S&P Stock Composite 500, shed just 0.2%, losing 5 points, closed at 28.31. Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up just 47 points this week, losing 0.2%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 23,729. Year-to-date, NASDAQ down just 3.8% on the heels of good performance on the tech stocks. S&P Stock Composite 500 down now 11.8% year-to-date, including dividends. The Dow is down 16.3%. Well, for the month of April, what's not to like? Best month in 23 years. Markets are clearly reacting to enormous government stimulus spending and by spending of the Federal Reserve. Stocks are also being lifted, of course, by the gradual lifting of restrictions. Now 12 states have loosened some of the restrictions. You know, Brian, let's start with you. The earnings forecast for the year keep coming down. You know, we talked last week on the podcast that the forward PE is 19 times forward earnings. As you're well aware, that's quite a bit above average. Now the earnings are coming down. Forward PEs are just down into the 18%, 18 times earnings range now. And, you know, so the first question out of the box here is, you know, after all this, stocks are a little still on the expensive side.
Yeah, I think if you're kind of stopping to assess things, maybe we're starting to feel a little bit better about the virus situation, but a little bit worse about the economic situation. FactSet coming out today with their earnings numbers, earnings down 17% forecasted for the calendar year. So I think with GDP coming out this week for the first quarter and seeing things down, that news only relates to really the last couple of weeks of March. So we have a whole second quarter where I think we're going to continue to get a stream of pretty challenging economic news. And to the degree that PEs remain reasonably high and earnings at least projected to look perhaps even worse, it's hard to see that stocks really offer a compelling value at this point.
You know, that on the heels, Brian, FactSet coming in with their latest forecast for earnings for calendar year 2020, that earnings could be down as much as 18% for the year. That's a big number anyway. You look at it, they're now calling for a 36% decline in earnings for the current quarter. And a 20% decline in the third quarter. So overall stocks are still on the pricey side. You know, we had news this week that almost every article concluded with the same thought, that the news is only going to get worse over the next couple of months. First time claims for unemployment insurance, boy, that was a big number. You take a look at the consumer spending that came out in March, down 7.5%. That's the steepest decline since they started keeping records way back in 1959. Eurozone GDP plunged at the fastest pace on record in the first quarter. And then finally, the Commerce Department reported Wednesday that GDP, as you mentioned, Brian, fell at a 4.8%. That's the worst since the financial crisis 12 years ago in 2008. Forecast call for the current quarter, as I mentioned, for potentially even a 30% decline in GDP. That's something we haven't seen in 90 years since the Great Depression. Hey, Art, thanks for joining the program. Let me bring you in here. What's your take on current events?
Yeah, it's pretty much what you guys have both been talking about. But when you listen to these numbers, as bad as they are, I think we have to be prepared, as you guys suggested, for them getting worse. I think it's important for us to appreciate the fact that stocks have come back not because of the bad numbers that are expected to continue to come out for 2020, but because of the expectation that 2021, things are going to turn around and the economy will expand, earnings will grow, and that will justify the prices being paid for stocks right now. But even better, I think it's important for investors to appreciate that, first of all, despite how bad stocks were through the last week or until about the last week of March, we have had a good recovery so far. And furthermore, we don't put everything in the stock market. We believe in balance, and that provides us with the confidence that we're going to get through even the roughest of times and make money on our stock portfolios over the long haul. So I'm less concerned about what's going on now, more interested in staying the course, making sure people react intelligently, not emotionally, to whatever happens.
Art, you talk to clients all day long, every day of the week. What's been the focus of those conversations recently?
Recently, I've had some clients, quite frankly, express interest, as you've mentioned before in podcasts, in adding money to the market. And you have to restrain some of that enthusiasm. Some folks who have some extra money can put it in. But the other thing, people have been looking back at their statements yet from March. I had a call yesterday from someone who mentioned how much they had lost on their portfolios through the end of March. And I reminded them, well, you haven't lost that much. And I'm amazed at the fact that our portfolios have held up so well throughout the course of the year. So I think concern about what's going on, concern about the market's ups and downs, concerns about volatility. But quite frankly, I think I've gotten more positive feedback with respect to how happy they are that they have us to help them get through whatever is going on out there. So I think it's more our role in helping them get through the difficult times.
Kyle, as you know, many economists initially expected a V-shaped recovery, which of course is a sharp downturn followed by a quick rebound. For the most part, those hopes have faded. I was struck by a comment from Harvard economist Karen Dinan, in my opinion, best summarized the problem in saying that you could lift the restrictions tomorrow and the economy would still not come back if people don't feel safe to go out. And I was struck by that comment vis-a-vis what has been going on in Georgia this week. Georgia, of course, lifted the restrictions on Monday. A lot of stores didn't open. There weren't a lot of people out and about because people don't feel safe. And the fact is, the United States is not performing nearly as many coronavirus tests as health officials say is necessary. So until that happens, a robust economic rebound won't be possible. So the market has been reacting favorably to stimulus spending. Last time I counted, $2.6 trillion. That's a lot of money. Market's reacting favorably to 12 states lifting the restrictions on social interaction. That's a step in the right direction. But until they figure out how to test all of us and ultimately come out with a vaccine, things aren't going to return to normal anytime soon. But Kyle, my question is, how do you see the recovery at this point?
You know, I think you point out an interesting thing, and that is that, you know, it's a very different future based on what the states say versus what the actual science is saying and versus what the actual risks are to going out and to ignoring some of the, you know, I think broader mandates for social or physical distancing. And so, you know, I think, yeah, it's great that there are some states who believe they're in a position to ease those restrictions. But at the same time, you know, I think people are rightfully afraid with, you know, without a vaccine, without a cure, but, you know, with some promising treatments now in development, that, you know, it's not time to go out there and really, you know, take those risks unless you have to, unless you've got to run to the grocery store, unless, you know, you've got a fish that you need to take for a walk, whatever it is. You know, I think we need to kind of think through not just what each state wants, but more broadly what the right thing to do is in terms of our health. And then, you know, you look at the earnings reports that have come out this week, you look at a lot of the CEOs that have been talking, what they're talking about is, you know, the W-shaped recovery or a U-shaped recovery or some other letter that doesn't reflect kind of that clear return to normal in a quick fashion. And so, you know, I think the consumer brands that we buy, the cyclicals out there, they're all preparing for an environment where they're going to have to hunker down for a little while, because you're not going to see people out buying dishwashers. You're not going to see people out buying new cars for a while, whether the states say it's okay or not, because they're just, you know, Bob, as you say, they're just not comfortable getting out there yet. And so I think that in time, as more people have been exposed, as more people have trust in the science and in, you know, the potential for a vaccine, you know, maybe as early as late this year, early next year, you know, all of a sudden now that conversation changes. But until we get there, there's still a lot of things that can go wrong. There's still a lot of things that can, I think, disrupt this. And nothing is more evident than when you look at a lot of the projections for second quarter GDP, for example. You've got people like JP Morgan that are forecasting a 40% decline in second quarter GDP. And then you've got some more optimistic economists that think, okay, maybe it's only 15 or 20%. But, you know, ultimately, as we get more information, as we start to feel more confident, those that range of predictions, I think, starts to narrow. And that's when we can really start to say, okay, here's what the next step looks like. But until we get there, I think, you know, people are just throwing darts right now at what they think is going to happen.
You know, Kyle, I always kind of like to think about risk on both sides of the equation. And I think a lot of what you said is very much to the point in that, you know, we've had a nice rally, but I think if we look ahead, there's still plenty of challenges ahead, and we don't know how quickly we'll ramp up. There's this concept of, we keep hearing about a 90% economy where, you know, it'll come back, but it's going to lag for a lengthy period of time till we get back to kind of full go. And so if you think about the rally and you think about the opportunity on the upside, it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of catalysts for this thing to get a lot better sooner. And yet there are some opportunities, I think, for things to get worse before they get better. So it just seems to me that maybe patience right now and keeping that more defensive profile might be the prudent thing to do for a while yet.
You know, Brian, all you got to do is look at what's been going on in the oil sector to underscore your remarks. Oil prices continue to fall this week. West Texas Intermediate hitting $10 a barrel briefly before bouncing back. Wasn't sure I'd ever see that number again. But it just speaks volumes as to the world doesn't need oil like we used to need it. And oil is one of the better leading indicators of where the economy is going. And as a result, that doesn't speak highly for at least the near future. But on the other hand, you know, I was interested and encouraged to see that small caps outperformed this week. So that's a sign that the markets are starting to recover. When the riskiest area of the stock market outperforms, tells me that people aren't afraid of risk. People are willing to embrace not just average risk, but above average risk in the stock market. A lot of small companies, people question whether they're even going to survive or not. So I was very encouraged to see small caps outperform this week. And it could, in fact, be a sign that this recovery may have some legs for a while.
And of course, Bob, I think some of that has to do with the second leg of small business lending that was made available. You know, a lot of that is going to go to support, maybe not those public businesses directly, but to support their consumers, to their customers, to support, you know, a lot of people that, you know, ultimately rely on those products that those small businesses are making. And so, you know, I think a big piece of that is just that lending program got another boost. But then the other piece is that the large caps had been rallying for so long that the little bit of the sell-off that happened towards the tail end of this week impacted those stocks that had rallied the most a little more. And so, you know, I think what we've seen is that investors are becoming a little more discerning in what they're going after now. For a while, it was, you know, everything is cheap. Let's just buy the things that are, you know, let's just buy everything for our portfolio. Now there's a little more differentiation between those things that are cheap and those things that are expensive. And so, you know, I think, as you say, you saw some people leaning a little more towards small caps, towards the more aggressive side of the market that hadn't recovered as much yet because there was opportunity to be had there.
Cal, you have to be impressed with the fact that growth stocks are holding up much better than almost anything else in the market. Looking early this morning at four of my favorite growth funds down just a couple percent for the year. You know, in all my years of doing this for a living, I've never seen that happen in a bear market. Growth stocks typically sink like rocks in a down market, particularly in a bear market. And the fact that they're holding up better than almost anything else, I think, is a snapshot of where we are right now, that their profit center, as you explained at our client seminar last September, many of the tech stocks, data mining is what it's all about. And to be able to sell that data has been almost uninterrupted in this shutdown. The fact that the tech stocks, you know, again, they sold off, as you said, yesterday and today, but the fact that they're holding up much better, you know, I mean, compared to some of the blended categories that are down 14, 15%, looked at a couple of diehard value funds down 17, 18%, and to see growth funds down 2-ish percent, I think is very telling. And, you know, if anything convinces us that the growth play is here to stay for a while, certainly that does. Do you want to comment on that, Kyle?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing there, or part of the interesting thing, is that, you know, technology isn't just a single sector anymore. It impacts a lot of sectors. And so what we've seen during this crisis is that those businesses that can use their technology to adapt to the situation, you know, you think of Amazon, where they reported earnings this week. They talked about their sales actually being up, despite the fact that, you know, you look broadly at how much has fallen off in terms of sales. Amazon doesn't technically get classified as a technology stock, and yet the technology that they've built around that product, the ability to store data with their database systems, the ability to, you know, sell online, that's all technology driven. And so, you know, I think it's not just a technology story anymore, but it's a what businesses can adapt to the environment and what businesses are so loaded with debt or so stuck in their old ways that they can't shift quickly enough to respond. And so, you know, I think that's what we've seen is the businesses that have cash, the businesses that have the ability to adapt and have the wherewithal to say, all right, here's the direction we're headed for a while. How do we take advantage of that? How do we lean into the opportunity? Those are the businesses that have done exceptionally well. It just so happens that a lot of those show up on the growth side of the ledger. A lot of the value stocks, I think, have tended to be a little more slow moving, a little bit more burdened with debt. And those are some of the reasons why they've been value. And that's just not the right place to be in this environment.
Kyle, to your point, even if you kind of swing back to the old economy, as it were, and you just look at the auto industry, look at the disparity in performance between Tesla and GM and Ford. You know, the old big companies just really have suffered dramatically, and Tesla has performed pretty well through this thing. Electric cars and the way they've approached things being the difference maker, you know.
Brian, that's a good setup for my next point, which is the dividends. GM just suspended their dividend. 83 companies have suspended their dividends or canceled them. An additional 142 companies have reduced their payouts. Overall, dividends now expected to fall about 10% this year, with the biggest cuts, of course, coming from energy and consumer discretionary stocks. But Art, let me ask you this. As you're well aware, 40% of the total return of stocks over a long period of time have come from dividends. So that's another headwind we got to face here. If dividends are going to go down 10%, you know, that takes away some of the total return on stock potentially.
Yeah, and it's specifically a headwind for those value stocks that are typically dividend payers. Aside from companies like Procter & Gamble or maybe Kimberly-Clark that are making toilet paper that's in demand, I think we have to be very careful. And it's a reminder of why it's important to have managers who can select stocks, not to just go with the averages. Because indeed, as many companies are going to be forced to reduce their dividends just to stay around. The growth companies, which aren't paying as much in dividends and don't have to worry because they're going to be surviving, are going to be a good place to be. So I think it's a better place for active management versus just relying on a fund that might just pick dividend-paying stocks or index funds.
Kyle, when you look at international investing now, international stocks have clearly lagged the U.S. A lot of that is due to indebtedness in the emerging world. Part of that is due to the fact that the dollar continues to strengthen. The news just looks like it keeps getting worse in the emerging world relative to the need for commodities, relative to dollar-denominated debt, relative to money literally pouring out of the emerging world back to the developed world. What's your advice to investors right now that have international positions or thinking about adding or subtracting to those? What advice do you have?
I mean, let's start with the most aggressive piece of that, which is the emerging market piece. And it's been, a terrible run for emerging market stocks. And you can't point to, a single period in time over the last 10 years, really, that is the cause of that. It's been really just a series of underperformance, a series of events that led to that underperformance. I think the reality, though, is that if you're looking beyond the next 3 to 5 years, as you should be for those types of investments, it still is absolutely a important piece to have as a small sliver of your portfolio. Long-term, there's great opportunity there. Long-term, there's lots of reasons to think that things get better in some of those places, while they may get worse in others. And so, Art, you mentioned the active management piece. When you look outside the U.S., especially in emerging markets, it's important to know what it is you hold, not just to buy everything. And then I think you bring it back then to the developed markets around the world. And there's a difference between developed market economies and developed market companies. I look at a number of funds that we hold, a number of funds that we invest with, where they might be investing in countries where you go, yeah, the economic picture doesn't look all that great there. The demographics aren't good. They're loaded with debt, whatever it is. But oftentimes, there's some really great companies that exist in places you otherwise wouldn't think to invest. And so, if you're a U.S.-focused investor, if you really are centered on here's all the issues going on with the rest of the world and look how great we are, I think you miss out on some really interesting ideas, some ideas maybe that differentiate your portfolio from just a U.S.-focused portfolio that maybe adds some diversification that you don't otherwise have. And then lastly, getting back to that time horizon thing, your stocks aren't the money that you're going to rely on in the next 5 years. It's the bond piece of your portfolio. And so, yeah, maybe they aren't doing as well right now, but longer term, they add the diversification you need. And more importantly, they add a lot of opportunities that you otherwise don't capture by being strictly focused here in the U.S.
Art, any last words?
No, all good.
Okay, stay Brian, safe. Any more comments?
Yeah, I just think off of Kyle, I think there's going to be some opportunities down the road, I think. There's some, you're talking about small cap, Bob, and international, emerging markets discussion. I think down the road, there's going to be some interesting things to take advantage of. I just think for now, maybe patience is a better virtue, and we'll take our time getting there,
Brian, I think it's so important. I mentioned this the last couple of weeks on the podcast, to engage in a little bit of creative visualization and to try to imagine a point in the future when, in fact, they do come out with a vaccine. It's not a guarantee, of course, but people I've talked to that are experts in that area feel confident that it's just a matter of time before they get it right. And the point simply is that the bad news won't last forever. Eventually, either we all get infected by it and build up immunity, or they come up with a vaccine that'll prevent us from getting ill. And it may not take all that much time. The studies range anywhere from a year and a half to 2 years. So it's not all that much time into the future where you can imagine a society that's free of the coronavirus. It's just that we need to get to that point. So I think the rebound's going to be a little slower than people think. I'm certainly encouraged by what we saw in April, best market and a very long time. So that shows you the bounce back capability. And, we need to get some news on the vaccine and then we'll be off to the races again. So keep the faith, everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We enjoyed doing the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.